What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Bridging the Geekdoms. I'm your host, Robert Slavinsky, and do I have a special treat for you today? My buddy, Deej Penhollow of We Are VR and the Cup of Cheer podcast, decided to come on the show and tell us a little bit about the new book that came out, Ready Player 2. Now, I know that he is a diehard fan of that book series. There's only two books, and I know he had some very interesting thoughts about Ready Player 1, the Steven Spielberg movie that came out a couple of years ago. But I know he was excited to talk about Ready Player 2 and dive into everything. So let's just get into it.
What's going on, everybody? Deej here from We Are VR, and I'm here today to talk to you briefly about Ready Player 2 by Ernest Cline. This thick bad boy was about $20, I think. Just came out on November 22nd, I believe. And I just wanted to talk about it because the Ready Player series, I guess is what we're going to refer to it as, is probably my new favorite series. Ready Player One is probably one of my favorite books of all time. I've listened to it like 50 times easily. You can get it on Audible. It's read by Will Wheaton of the Star Trek franchise and Big Bang Theory. And it is very, very rapidly becoming a huge thing. If you haven't heard about it already, you're probably living under a rock. They made a blockbuster film by Steven Spielberg. It's kind of trash, to be honest. Don't hate me for that. I really, really think that it's the worst book-to-screen adaptation that has ever been made. Since maybe even The Goblet of Fire or Half-Blood Prince, both of them are trash in terms of adapting. As far as the Ready Player One movie goes, pretty much the only thing they got right was the character names, I guess, is I think what they did. I don't know. The whole thing is just a mess, and I understand why they did it. Ready Player One is it's a great book, and it relies very heavily on 80s nostalgia, and it talks a great deal about like Blade Runner and Rush 2112 and Dungeons and Dragons and a lot of stuff that like a lot of people don't know about. So when they did the movie, they changed stuff, you know, and they had to change this kind of stuff. Anyway, long story short, the book was done like 10 years ago. And finally, the sequel came out. Now, I'm doing this review on my We Are VR front, which is a new show / podcast / TikTok account where I put up VR content. If you are a TikToker, you can scan this code right here with your TikTok account, and it'll take you to my content. It's very quickly becoming a popular thing. Anyway, we're talking about this today, Ready Player 2. And this book, I'm gonna spoil some stuff probably. I don't know if you're here for a non-spoiler review from a fan, then you should probably leave. But this book is a wonderful predecessor, or not predecessor, whatever the word is, a wonderful sequel. It takes place like literally 9 days after the first book. Now, if you want like a spoiler-free review, I'm going to play a clip here. This is Will Wheaton himself. It's from New York Comic Con, and it's during an interview with the author Ernie Cline. This is like the synopsis read by Will Wheaton himself, so I'm going to go ahead and play that right now.
An unexpected quest. Two worlds at stake. Are you ready? Days after Oasis founder James Halliday's contest, Wade Watts makes a discovery that changes everything. Hidden within Halliday's vaults, waiting for his heir to find, lies a technological advancement that will once again change the world and make the Oasis 1,000 times more wondrous and addictive than even Wade dreamed possible. With it comes a new riddle and a new quest. A last Easter egg from Halliday, hinting at a mysterious prize, and an unexpected, impossibly powerful new and dangerous new rival awaits, one who'll kill millions to get what he wants. Wade's life and the future of the Oasis are again at stake, but this time the fate of humanity also hangs in the balance. Lovingly nostalgic and wildly original, as only Ernest Cline could conceive it, Ready Player 2 takes us on another imaginative, fun, action-packed adventure through his beloved virtual universe and jolts us thrillingly into the future once again. Holy shit, dude, that's amazing.
So there you have it. That is the gist of Ready Player 2, and it is, seriously is nuts. Like, I don't typically toot my own horn. I have a really hard time. I don't know what you want to call it. I sort of suffer from the inability of being able to see things coming. And it's great when it comes to things like The Mandalorian and Star Wars movies in general, or like Aquaman. Like, I had no, you know, I don't see these things coming. And it's quite funny, actually. I can never tell where things are going to go. And it's great. So when it came to this book, I honestly had no idea where it was going to go and how it was going to end up this way. And it was nice. Like, I really enjoyed it. What it does is it takes this lovely thing called virtual reality. This is my Oculus Quest 2. I play this thing all the time. It's great. And I actually have two of them here. I have an Oculus Quest 1 as well. This is what it looks like. This is my wife's Oculus Quest 1, and it's a pretty nice console as well. And if you guys haven't tried VR, it's definitely something. Obviously, if you're here, you probably know what VR is because, you know, algorithms on the internet and such things. But the great thing about it is, if you remember in the first movie, which I know I said it was trash, but it does slightly, you know, go forth with what's going on. Everybody has these VR headsets. They put it on. You go into a world called the Oasis, and it's, you know, endless worlds of opportunity and advancement, and you can do anything. You can be anybody. You can do what you want to do, and that's really cool and everything. Well, in this book, Wade, the main character, after he wins the contest, he unlocks a new headset that, like, basically it's like the Matrix. You strap it on your head, you go to sleep, and it basically uploads your consciousness to the Oasis, and you can feel things, you can touch things, you can taste things, and it also lets you experience anything you want by anybody you want with zero repercussions. I mean, you can experience lovemaking with any human being on the planet. You can upload your own instance of lovemaking with anybody on the planet. You can try any drug you want. You can eat anything you want. If you're allergic to something, you can eat it in the Oasis and you won't experience, you know, an allergic reaction to it. You can, if you're a cancer patient, you can upload yourself and you feel great. If you're paralyzed, if you're a paraplegic, you can't walk. Even if you're paralyzed from the waist down, you can put this headset on and you can walk around the Oasis. You can feel like you're walking around the Oasis. It's similar to what Elon Musk is trying to do with the Neuralink. It's nuts. Like, the technology is crazy. I don't know if the world will ever get to that. I'd like to hope it would within my lifetime. I think that'd be kind of cool. Now, the thing that happens in this book, obviously, you know, it wouldn't be a book without a protagonist and an antagonist and everything like that. But the villain is nuts. I'm not going to spoil who the villain is. But I will tell you, it's not the same villain from the first book, movie, whatever you want to call it. It is not IOI and Nolan Sorrento. In this book, Gregarious Simulations, the company who makes the Oasis, they actually inherit and liquidate all of the assets in IOI, and then they gain everything back, and they sell this new headset, and they make billions of dollars, and everybody in the world has one of these headsets, and it's nuts. Basically, from what I understand, is that there's like this little armband, like a neural, it's like raw neural data that you record, any experience you want, and you upload it to basically like a torrent sharing site, and you can download these experiences right to your brain. And you experience, you know, I think the instance they described was surfing. There was like a woman surfing. I mean, if it's a woman who does it, you become that woman and you experience things exactly the way she experienced them. However, you're not in control during that experience. So you just are kind of along for the ride, but you can feel the water. You can taste the salt in the air. You can feel the wind in your face. You know, whatever she's experiencing, you're also experiencing because it's right into your brain. That's nuts. Like, that's absolutely crazy. You know, and the book takes you to so many worlds. Like, I'm a big fan of the John Hughes franchise. So like there's a part of the book where it goes to a planet that is all the John Hughes movies taking place in it simultaneously at one time. So every instance of Shermer, Illinois, Shermer High School, anything like that, Home Alone, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, all of that stuff is happening in the same instance of Chicago at the same time. Every movie plays out in a simultaneous loop just over and over again. And you can go to that planet and you can like do things to the character. And there's like a quest that's there and they have to figure out what to do. It's so cool. Robert Downey Jr. appears in the book, younger Robert Downey Jr. Like from back in the day. He appears in that book. John Cryer appears in the book. Like there's a ton of stuff that goes on. So cool. Now I'm notoriously not a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. Don't hate me. I know I perpetuate myself to be a nerd. Yeah, I'm not huge on Lord of the Rings. Go figure. Anyway, there's a part of the book that involves like Lord of the Rings. You know, and in the first book, like they go to like the Blade Runner. They go to I can't remember the name of the building. But they go to that building, and then in the movie, they end up going to The Shining, which is very bizarre, but whatever, you know. But the book is just fantastic. Like, I can't say enough good things about it. I've listened to it one time. I'm still sort of, like, processing it in my head, and then I will definitely go back and listen to even the first one and the second one back to back. You know, I had just finished the first book, like, a few weeks before this second book came out. And then I went into the second book. So I didn't have too much time in between them. But now I can listen to them like back to back to back, which is so cool that I have that available. And I think Ernie Cline had talked about maybe doing a third book. I don't know if it's going to be like, you know, another sequel. But he did talk about doing a prequel, like about James Halliday and Ogden Morrow, which would be really, really cool. And I don't know, you know, in terms of story, how that's going to play out. Because this book is strikingly similar to the first in terms of like finding a quest and, you know, finding, you know, in the first book, they chase after three keys and three gates. In this book, they chase after six shards, like six of the siren shards and the siren soul. It's very interesting what they come up with. You know, there's, you know, and in the book, they have like the high five, which is Parzival H, Shoto, Daito, and Artemis. And in this book, they introduced the Low Five, which are another group of gunters that they are introduced. And they're very resourceful. And it's just absolutely mind-blowing where they took this story and then how it ends. And I'm like, whoa. Like, there's definitely room for a third story there, I think. And I hope that they go with it, because the third story would be wildly different than the second story, and that's really cool. But yeah, I think that's all I really have to say about it. Go read both of them. If you have access to Audible, heck, if you have access to a local bookstore, pick it up. The audiobook is fantastic. I don't recommend ever watching the movie. If you haven't seen the movie and you're going to read the book, don't watch the movie. Please heed my warning on that one. I promise you, one of them will be a waste of money and time. And I promise you also that it won't be the book. That movie is the most disappointing thing ever. And I'm not exaggerating. I can't stress that enough. There's a lot of people out there who are like, oh, you have to just take it for what it is. Now, in the book, they talk about there's like a line, it's like a throwaway line in the beginning narrative by Parzival or Wade. And he talks about how, like, oh, I won this contest, and every book and movie and news story and thing that came out that was about that got it totally wrong. And then he proceeds to tell you it from his point of view. Well, people in these Facebook groups are fans of the first book that are also fans of the movie are like, well, you need to think about it as like one of those movies that they talk about in the book. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works. You know what I mean? This is a movie that exists outside of the story. Okay, so like if they... So it exists outside the story, and they paid millions of dollars to get it done, and they got Steven Spielberg to do it, and the author, Ernest Cline, was on set, supposedly. You know, they made these changes, and they're like, yep, that's how it is. And everybody loved the movie. That pisses me off. Because that movie... it's just so inaccurate, and I can't forgive something like that. It's like The Walking Dead. Don't get me started on The Walking Dead, but if you read the comics and then watch the show, it's so unbelievably inaccurate, it hurts. You know, and I can't handle stuff like that. Now, arguably, I should have watched the movie first, but I'm not that type of guy. Not even close. If I know something is coming out, I'm going to read the source material. That's just the way it is. That's the way a lot of us nerds are. The source material is important, and that's what we got to do. So I guess, you know, just do with that information what you will, and we'll call it that. But thanks for watching. Hopefully I'll be on here doing some streaming and stuff with this lovely Oculus headset, and I'm going to do tons of VR content. But here's my TikTok code again. If you want to scan this with your TikTok account, get on there and give me a follow. I put stuff up all the time in regards to that. And again, this is what the Ready Player 2 looks like. And here's what Ready Player 1 looks like. If you can find it like that, there's like 15 different covers. So give it a shot though. I mean, they're great, great books. But thanks for joining me. This is the first episode on one of these channels. I'm going to start doing, you know, regular things. So thanks a lot. See you guys.
And there it was, guys. That was Deej Penhollow's review of Ready Player 2. Let me know, let Deej know what you thought of the book, if you read it. If you haven't read it yet, tell us what you're excited for with the book. But definitely let us know. Reach out to us on all the social medias. Find us both over at spoilerverse.com, where there's so much more going on over there besides just podcasts and YouTube channels. There's articles, opinion pieces, all that kind of stuff. So, with that said, I'm not going to keep you here any longer. Thanks for tuning in, checking out the review of Ready Player 2, and I will catch you all next week, maybe, or later. I don't know. I'll see you soon.